This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
People, they have also the feeling that even that billions and billions of dollars poured into the country for reconstruction, they don't see really the effect of that reconstruction, and especially when jihadist operation can still be carried like 50 miles around the capital. They are very, very close.
That's journalist Nicolas Pinault in Paris on the deepening political crisis for Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita amid deadly attacks by jihadists. Details coming up. And the International Committee of the Red Cross says violence in many parts of Africa has not stopped because of COVID-19. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Cameroon, thousands of children who fled the country's separatist conflict in western regions are marking the International Day of the African Child, which underscores the right to education. Schools in French-speaking regions hosting the children are calling for peace so that schools closed in the troubled English-speaking regions can be reopened. But as Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, peace is elusive after 4 years of fighting.
Treasure Famonui, a 13-year-old who escaped from Cameroon's English-speaking northwestern town of Kumbo a year ago after his school was torched by armed men, has joined 300 other school children at the Etukebe government school in Yaoundé to ask for closed schools in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions to be reopened. Famonye says he does not want his peers to continue to be deprived of education.
I stayed in the house for 3 years without going to school. I don't want my brothers and sisters who are in the northwest and southwest to be stopped from going to school. Many of them want to be doctors, teachers and presidents.
Famonye lives with his uncle, who has agreed to pay his fees. He said many children lack the opportunity he has. Muma B. Yvonne of the Cameroon Women's Peace Movement is asking for the rights of children to education to be respected on the Day of the African Child in memory of the June 16, 1976 street protest in South Africa against poor quality education there. Yvonne says the situation in Cameroon is becoming worse because children are outrightly denied access to education.
We are sincerely calling on the stakeholders to stop hostilities. Please, please, our children need their education. Without education, they are nothing. Education is their right.
The separatist crisis began in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers organized protests against what they called the marginalization of English in the majority French-speaking nation. The military responded with a crackdown and armed groups took up weapons, saying that they were defending their people from military brutality. Separatists called for a closure of English-speaking schools until the crisis is solved. Some parents transferred their children to be educated in safer French-speaking towns, but a majority of English-speaking students have remained at home, according to the government. Asheri Kilu, the Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education, says the government is determined to educate all children, but that some schools are constantly attacked, torched, looted, or are occupied by separatists.
In the Northwest, 46 elementary schools were burned down by the separatists, and 24 of those schools were occupied by them. In the Southwest, there were 73 schools burned and 35 occupied. Of course, the military is taking care of getting the separatists out of the school campuses that have been occupied.
The separatists have blamed the military for torching schools and public buildings and said they will allow children to go to school only when the central government withdraws its troops from the English-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Mali's army says a weekend ambush and a military convoy in central Mali left at least 24 soldiers dead and an unspecified number missing. Mali authorities blamed the attacks on jihadists. This latest flare-up of violence comes 2 weeks after French troops announced they killed Al-Qaeda's leader in the region and amid a deepening political crisis in Mali. For more, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to journalist Nicolas Pinon in Paris.
So far, the Malian army acknowledged the loss of 24 soldiers. That's what they said on Monday night. But we have to be cautious on the death toll because, according to Agence France-Presse, a total of 64 soldiers were on board of those trucks when they were attacked by jihadist forces near the border with Mauritania. But we have to be cautious because on jihadist website, you have some unverified videos claiming the death of 29 soldiers and also one officer kidnapped and about 10 pickup trucks and a heavy weapon stolen during this attack. This is not the first time that the army in this country has been targeted by the jihadist forces in the region.
This latest attack comes amid a serious political crisis in Mali. Can you talk about that?
Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, the Malian president, offered a way to talk with his opposition. You write, for the past few weeks now, you had several huge demonstrations in Bamako, the capital. And basically, since he came to power, people claim that Mali has never been able to recover its territorial integrity, and also he doesn't seem to have really implemented political and economic reforms to make sure that Mali will go forward after the huge war in 2012-2013 that led to the intervention of the French and also an international coalition. Right now you have UN forces, the MINUSMA in Mali, who's also targeted by attacks by the jihadist group. And so far people against the president feel that he never had the strength to be able to make sure that his country is back together. And people, they have also the feeling that even that billions and billions of dollars poured into the country for reconstruction, they don't see really the effect of that reconstruction. And especially when jihadist operation can still be carried like 50 miles around the capital. They are very, very close to Bamako, the capital.
This type of violence is not isolated to Mali. Can you talk about what is happening at the regional level?
Absolutely. As of last week, you had 10 soldiers from Ivory Coast who were killed at the border with Burkina Faso in an attack. And several armies in the region, like from Niger, where you had hundreds of soldiers who lost their life last year, for example. You have so many armies targeted in the region and so many attacks claimed by Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, but also by the Islamic State in the Great Sahel. We used to say that they mainly used to focus in Mali, but right now they can operate on each side of the border. It can be Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali, and they keep extending their way of operating. You kind also wonder, how is that possible? Because you got the French army, the United States is helping also with intelligence and drones in the region, surveillance, and you have also the UN force in Mali, more than 10,000 troops over there. So it's really interesting, and you have so many criticism within organization, within the civil society, saying, you know, we have all these troops, all these foreign troops on our soil, and yet we don't see any improvement on the security situations.
That was VOA's Jason Patinkin speaking with journalist Nicolas Pinot in Paris. Turkey and Libya's internationally recognized government are discussing possible Turkish use of two military bases in the North African country with a view to a lasting Turkish presence in the South Mediterranean. No final decision have been made about use of Misrata Naval Base and the Alwatiya Air Base, which was recently recaptured by Turkish-backed Government of National Accord. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Chinawi discussed this new development with Wolfgang Poshtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations and a former military attaché in Libya.
Turkish armed forces are already using Misrata and Tripoli harbor, as well as the airports at these cities. Even fighter jets could be temporarily deployed to these bases, even F-16 jets. So new bases like Alwatiya and Misrata as a naval base would have no major impact on the current civil war. It will get time to get Alwatiya Air Base ready to host Turkish fighter jets and transport aircraft permanently, probably at least some months. The same is the case for Misrata Harbor and the more sophisticated Turkish warships, in particular the air defense frigates and submarines. So it needs to be stressed that the impact of these bases, even if in the short term it's not that significant, in the long run it will be huge. Turkey will have a geostrategically very well-located base in the central Mediterranean, just opposite of Italy. Alwatiya will not only be a drone and fighter base exclusively to be used by Turkey, but also a transportation hub for the logistic support of the Turkish expansion of influence in the whole Sahara region. This will not taste the Algerians, the Egyptians, and in particular the Europeans very well.
The rival parliament in eastern Libya already rejected the previous agreement between the GNA and Turkey, which allowed Turkey to provide its military backing of GNA, accusing GNA head of treason. Could Faiz Sarraj sign this new deal, giving Turkey a more permanent air and naval presence in Libya and boosting its claims to offshore oil and gas resources?
Sarraj has no choice. He will sign, no doubt about it. Sarraj is fully dependent on Turkey, not only in the war against the Libyan National Army, but he will also need the backup by Turkey to survive domestically in the power struggle within Tripoli and Misrata. For sure, this will not make him any additional friends among those in Tripolitania who are already now against the permanent presence of the Turks, but against what they perceive as a return of the Ottoman Empire. But they said he has no choice.
Egypt had also rejected the previous agreement, saying it amounted to a flagrant violation of international law. Could the proposed air and naval bases force Egypt to direct involvement in Libya based on protecting Egyptian national security?
No, this will certainly be taken into account in Cairo and make them feel more unease. This will not directly lead to a military intervention. Such an intervention would be rather triggered if Operation Volcano and Turks advance further to the east and if they come closer to the Egyptian border. But only the intention or even the basing of Turkish military assets in Libya, this will not trigger directly an Egyptian intervention.
So what could be the European Union's reaction to the new Turkish push in Libya?
The European interests, as said already, will be heavily affected in a very negative way by these new Turkish bases. But the European Union cannot do much. It just will continue to demand the withdrawal of all foreign troops from Libya, even without naming Turkey directly. The only one exception is France, whose president has criticized the Turkish presence in Libya heavily. Turkey plays right now in a league, the military league, where the European Union does not want to play. And to be honest, what should they do? Turkey supports the Government of National Accord, and this is a government which is also supported, at least officially, by the European Union. The whole Libyan crisis has not been dealt very well by the European Union, and now they get the consequences from this.
Would that enable Turkey to use migration as a weapon against the European Union?
This new position of Turkey in Western Tripolitania gives Turkey significantly better strategic position towards Europe. This includes, of course, as you indicated, migration. Turkey now does not control only the Eastern Mediterranean migration route towards Europe, but also the Central Mediterranean route towards Europe. And this will allow Turkey to pressure the European Union from both sides. This will make life for the Europeans and the negotiations with Turkey much more complicated. Turkey controls now not only several important gas pipelines through Turkey from Central Asia and Russia to Europe, but now also a key pipeline from North Africa, Green Stream pipeline. This will be quite a problem for the Italians.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations and a former military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Chinawi. The International Committee of the Red Cross says violence in many parts of Africa has not stopped because of COVID-19. The organization says in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Cameroon, Burkina Faso, Mali, and South Sudan, families continue to be forcibly uprooted, fueling an already dire displacement crisis, now complicated by COVID-19. Mavis Ochere in Ghana has more.
In a new report, the Norwegian Refugee Council says out of the 10 most neglected displacement crises in the world, 9 are in Africa. Crystal Walls, the spokesperson for the International Committee of Red Cross, says the effort to contain the COVID-19 virus is making things worse.
For many of the families forcibly displaced by conflict and violence, the COVID-19 pandemic is a crisis on top of a crisis. We've seen food prices rise and staple good prices increase because of trade disruptions and restrictions dealing with COVID-19. We've seen it harder for people to earn an income, especially for daily wage earners who really need to get out there each day to their small business to make money.
In Africa, the Norwegian Refugee Council says the worst displacement crises are in Cameroon, Burkina Faso, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Mali, South Sudan, Nigeria, the Central African Republic, and Niger. These countries either are battling sectarian militants or have experienced years of political unrest or civil war. Wells says refugees and internally displaced people in these countries are among the most vulnerable to the new coronavirus. She says many live in overcrowded environments where physical distancing is next to impossible and people often do not have access to running water and soap. Wells says in the Democratic Republic of Congo, millions of people have been forced to flee their homes in search of safety and the number continue to rise. She says this shows that international humanitarian laws on armed conflict are not being respected.
We continue to see abuses against civilians by weapon bearers on many sides of the conflict. People are being killed, injured, displaced from their homes, and far too many subjected to sexual violence. Property is being destroyed, and many are traumatized by fighting. We see people searching for refuge in different parts of the Democratic Republic of Congo, but also we're seeing people flee across the borders to countries like Angola, Burundi, Uganda, and elsewhere.
In Cameroon, Wells says the level of insecurity and violence continue to limit access to basic services such as healthcare, education, and disrupt the ability of people to earn a living. Wells says the International Committee of the Red Cross expects that the number of displaced people in Burkina Faso will increase because there is evidence that the violence will not stop soon. The Red Cross has increased its presence in Burkina Faso to respond to the needs of the displaced and has assisted more than 50,000 displaced people in the north of the country and more than 9,000 people in the east. She says in Mali, conflict and climate change continue to spark massive population movements within the country and across borders, and that sectarian attacks on villages continue despite the COVID-19 pandemic.
Just last week, we saw attacks in central Mali that left villages burned to the ground, herds and property looted, and families killed and forced to flee. And for displaced people in Mali, COVID-19 is an additional threat, which comes on top of often more immediate threats to life, such as gunshot wounds and blast injuries, all while medical care in remote areas is often limited at best.
She says an eruption of violence in Jonglei State in May in South Sudan displaced thousands of families displaced, adding to the nearly 4 million South Sudanese already displaced. She says while a peace agreement in South Sudan has reduced violence, COVID-19 has seriously hampered aid organizations as they try to respond when violence does flare. For instance, she says the Red Cross runs two surgical facilities to care for victims of violence, but the pandemic has limited access to them. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Zimbabwe's water situation has worsened following recent deaths due to suspected contaminated water in a suburb of the second largest city. Hadigando gives us more on the issue.
Seven residents of Luveve Township in Bulawayo have died after suffering diarrhea or disease from what appears to be contaminated water. Four of the victims were children. The recent deaths have government and city officials grappling for answers. Residents suspect that water tankers delivered to the area may be contaminated. Bulawayo City Council says that water containers residents use for water are the problem. However, residents say the water is clearly dirty and has a strong odor. Bulawayo's mayor said that the initial tests of tap water and water containers yielded a negative result. He said the city was now doing stool tests to establish possible causes. On Monday, hundreds of residents thronged the Luveve clinic complaining of stomach aches, vomiting and diarrhea. Tents had to be set up at the clinic as the facility was overwhelmed. Stella Ndlovu is the member of parliament for Luveve. She says some residents are now hospitalized at Mpilo Hospital, the biggest referral hospital in the region.
And it could be we are going to have more deaths according to my own assessment. It's diarrhea, vomiting, tummy ache.
Efforts to get hold of the Bulawayo City health officials for comment proved fruitless. Ndlovu said she has also been having difficulty getting information from city officials. City Council denies that its water is contaminated. Bulawayo City officials have attempted to have the city declared a water shortage area. Three of the six dams that supply the city were decommissioned and the remaining three are operating at 30% capacity. Residents get water once every 5 days. The national government says Bulawayo is failing to harness the water. Ndlovu says she is going to Harare so she can move a point of privilege motion in parliament to avert what she considers is a water crisis. Progressive Residents Association, BPRIA, has called on the national government and the Bulawayo City Council, BCC, to urgently trace the source of contamination in Luveve. Political analyst Effie Nwe says the water problem could not have happened at a worse time, considering the COVID-19 safety rules.
As soon as people stop trusting, as soon as they lose confidence in the cleanliness and the safety of the water that is coming out of the tap, they will shy away from using that water. It means less and less personal hygiene, and that heightens the risk of infection. Also, as long as people do not have confidence in the water, it means that the city will have the challenges in terms of its image.
The Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association also wrote a letter to President Emmerson Mnangagwa to have the city's water situation declared a national disaster so resources can be mobilized to address the problems. Reporting for VOA, this is Adegondo in Bulawayo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09.05 and 20.05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.